You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with the Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've been listening to Hot Texas, the Hot Texas Swing Band, our good buddy, Alex Dormont.
And you are listening tonight or watching episode 188. We are so delighted that you have come along for the ride, whether you're watching live tonight or you pick this up later at your convenience. We are just so happy to have you with us.
We are.
Yeah. So, Jim, who's joining us tonight?
Robert J. Sawyer. The king of the science fiction writers.
Delighted to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. And it's okay, Rob, to his friends, but we want to make sure you get his name as you see it on the screen in case you're ordering or you're looking for his website, Robert J. Sawyer. Where are you joining us from tonight, Rob?
Excuse me. I'm in Calgary, Alberta, Canada right now, which is about 2,500 miles west of where I normally live in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, visiting one of my very best friends, Randy McCharles, who's a very fine mystery fiction writer, and just getting a little away from the hustle and bustle of the big city.
Yeah, well, you've been on a book tour that has been taking you, I don't know, you've been in rain, you've been in storms, you've been every kind of place, and I think you've already been on both sides of the border, have you? Or are you coming?
I have not yet.
States?
I'm heading to the United States later this month, but I did my Cross Canada book tour and had a spectacular time, I must say. It was a really great event.
Well, we're so very delighted. And Jim, where are we broadcasting from tonight?
Well, I'll tell you. Speaking of ghosts in the machine, there are two guys in Silo 13 within the quantum computer that are duking it out, both claiming to be Jim Bell. They can't be Jim Bell. I'm the real Jim Bell. Or am I?
Actually, Jim, it's a very good question. Some of our listeners or watchers may know this. We've made references to this in the past, but there are a variety of hoax emails going out to many authors claiming that they are coming from host Jim Bell. And now host or scout for Rendezvous with the Writer, Bobby Bell.
Yes.
And dear author friends, if you get one of those, just forward it to us at podcast hosts@rendezvouswiththewriter.com. We will get right back to you, and you may actually still be able to get on the show in 2027 because we appreciate you reaching out. But this is a huge dilemma in the writing world, Rob. Do you get a lot of emails from?
Oh, I get about 20 a day. I got two today from, you know, New York Times bestselling author Mitch Albom. Of course, it wasn't him offering to feature me, you know, on his podcast. And they have, I just got one tonight for a book that isn't even out yet by me, but the Amazon listing is up. My nonfiction collection, Sawyer on Science Fiction, comes out in September. And, you know, ChatGPT had sent the most flattering synopsis possible of that book. It's the kind of perfect review you want, and saying, and we can help you promote it. Mm. It is a scam. Keep your credit card in your wallet. It's astonishing to me because, in general, writers are not the richest people on the planet. You know, one of my favorite jokes is, what's the difference between a full-time professional writer and a large pepperoni pizza? A large pepperoni pizza can feed a family of four. So why people are trying to scam, you know, a demographically poor group? You know, go after Jeff Bezos. If he loses a billion, he doesn't even notice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think it has gone on now for enough months that we're discovering authors and publishers are, you know, they now the rate their radar goes up. Like, I don't think so. I'm going to check this out, but a time waster for a lot of us.
Like anything in life, right? If it sounds too good to be true, it is.
Well, Jim,
I like that joke about the pizza. I haven't heard that before.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about Rob, and then we'll really get started talking about his books.
Okay. Robert J. Sawyer has won both the Hugo and Nebula Awards for Best Novel of the Year. The ABC series Flash Forward was based on his novel of the same name. He was a guest of honor at the 2023 World Science Fiction Convention in China. He is a member of the Order of Canada and one of the initial inductees into the Canadian Science Fiction and Fantasy Hall of Fame. His latest novel is The Downloader 2, Ghosts in the Machine, a sequel to his best-selling first book, The Downloaders. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm delighted. Thank you for that very nice summary, Jim. I've been very lucky in my career, I have to say.
We love to hold up the book, and we have had some of our guests say, oh, they love seeing all those post-it notes in there for all the pages.
You've done your research.
We needed to go back to.
There are also a lot of jokes in there, eh? Well, I'm gonna read a passage from the book later, but I was going to go for one of those jokes, and I thought, no, some people have heard them. But, you know, like we kind of thought maybe Rob was an old movie buff.
Yeah, you must like old movies.
I certainly am an old movie buff, not to the degree that two of my main characters are. Certainly, I love old movies. My all-time favorite movie is Casablanca, for instance. And in my top 10 are The Maltese Falcon, Judgment at Nuremberg, Dr. Strangelove. These are all black and white classics from either the early 60s or going right back to the 30s. And I love them, but I have two characters who love them even more. The mayor of my little community of post-apocalyptic survivors, Roscoe Kadulian, a convicted murderer, and another convicted murderer. So maybe I'm saying something about murderers get all their ideas from all that film noir from the 30s. Old movies, you know, science fiction tends to be ungrounded, right? It's out there. It's in outer space or in the far future. So I like to put pop culture references in so that people don't feel quite as at sea as they might otherwise. Throw them into the far future. People still remember certain movies, certain TV shows, certain popular music, sports teams, and so forth. And you do. I mean, we still watch I Love Lucy today, right?
Sure.
And I Love Lucy was from the 1950s.
Sure.
Yeah, it's
75 years ago.
Yes.
You make a reference at least once or maybe twice to Planet of the Apes.
I love my Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, and it was 1967.
It was made in 67. You're absolutely right. Yeah. In fact, the copyright date does say 67. Came out in February 68. And for me, you know, it was the script was co-written by Rod Serling of Twilight Zone fame and Michael Wilson, who had been blacklisted in the McCarthy era. All the dialogue is by Wilson. All of the plot is by Serling. That's how that collaboration worked. But it taught me that science fiction could be a vehicle for social commentary, not just special effects. Because Planet of the Apes is all about race relations and the fear of nuclear war and the debate between evolution and creationism. It's about front page newspaper headlines, even though it's set in the year 3978. It's about the present day of 1968 when it was made.
You know, it's interesting. Our guest last week, Kirk Ellis, has just released a fabulous book on Bonnie and Clyde. And we watched it, he suggests early on in his book, you need to watch the movie if you haven't. And his book is about the making of the movie and a whole Faye Dunaway and Gene Hackman. But the same thing, it is about the making of the movie, but also Kirk identifies some things about our DNA in the American character. And he talks a lot about some of that film is also dealing with issues, even though it's taking place in the 30s, it's dealing with issues that were happening at the same time period as Planet of the Apes. So when I was reading that about Planet of the Apes, I'm like, okay, now wait a minute. What was Kirk saying about Bonnie and Clyde from the same year?
Well, I mean, if it's 1930s, of course, it was wealth inequality. I mean, Bonnie and Clyde, you know, were in the depths of the Great Depression. And that sometimes leads people to desperate acts.
So very interesting that those two films came out at, you know, at the same time. So fun.
The same year, also 2001, The Space Odyssey came out.
Yes. And Star Trek is celebrating as a TV show. Isn't it celebrating also its... Is it
its 60th anniversary this year. It came on the original series in 66 and went off in 69. So, yes, I'm speaking at two major Star Trek conferences, one in Ticonderoga, New York this month, the big trek to Las Vegas in Las Vegas, Nevada next month, both of which are celebrating the 60th anniversary. William Shatner, Captain Kirk himself, will be at both events.
We want your life. Can you download us into your, let's see, can you upload us and then download us into your life? We love to be a day with you.
In the downloaded too, because they're dealing with far future technology, it is possible to upload your consciousness and download it into somebody else's body. So the answer is yes, I can make that happen. Or at least
we'll
my characters
take yours.
Can.
We'll take yours. That would be great.
It might come with some drawbacks. You don't know.
I know.
Oh, this is the whole point. There are lots of drawbacks.
We'll get to that in a minute.
It's the whole point of writing. Yeah, dramatic. Yeah. You're looking for the pluses, the minuses, the conflicts. That's how you tell a story. As you say, story is everything. Story is pretty much characters who are fighting against some circumstances, fighting against other people, or fighting against their own heart.
Yep. Yeah, and we're going to get into all of that in a moment. But first, we'd love you to talk a little bit about what was it like to become a member of the Order of Canada?
So about 30 years ago, there was another writer in Canada, one of my best friends, and we were talking about what we wanted for our career capstone, the biggest thing we could possibly get. And he went on to win the top award in his field. He was a horror writer. Which is the Bram Stoker Award from the Horror Writers Association. And I went on to win the top award in my field, the Hugo Award. But the thing we said we wanted was the Order of Canada, which is Canada is part of, you know, the Commonwealth, but we do not have knighthoods in Canada. There's no Sir somebody in Canada. So the Order of Canada is the highest honor given in Canada. And and it goes to people in all walks of life. It goes to military people. It goes to great scientists, great theologians, great indigenous leaders, of which we have many in Canada.
Yes.
And also, every once in a while, to a writer. I like to say that I was the first person to get the Order of Canada for work as a science fiction writer. And I got it before William Shatner got it, who is, of course, best known for his work in science fiction.
We were talking and we thought maybe it was similar to the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
That is exactly the closest parallel. That's right. It's given by the head of state at a ceremony in the national capital, black tie. Or like in the UK where they have the New Year's Honours List, where the Queen, now the King, our king in Canada as well, by the way, announces, who is getting the various honors. Okay. But Order of Canada is the top honor, and I am so, so thrilled to have it. But also, it comes with a superpower. I get to perform Canadian citizenship ceremonies. Personally sworn in thousands of new Canadian citizens. And that turns out to be the thing that gives me the most pride of anything.
I bet.
My goodness. Oh, that's so interesting. So let's see, have you always been a writer from a very young age? And has science fiction been what has had your heart all along?
Yes and yes. I grew up, as you say, with Planet of the Apes, the original Star Trek, 2001, A Space Odyssey, and I was born in 1960, the Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo programs, the going to the moon. They landed on the moon when I was 9 years old for the first time. And years later, I got to have dinner with Buzz Aldrin, which was one of the other great experiences of my life, the second man on the moon. I loved science fiction. I loved the idea that there was going to be a bright and sunny, exciting future, which is what Star Trek talked about. There wasn't much dystopian science fiction at that time. That came kind of later. And I really, except for classic like 1984, Brave New World. I always wanted to write it, and I actually donated my papers to a university in Canada some years back. And one of the things they were most delighted to have was the very first short story I'd written in pencil when I was 8 years old. So
Oh my God.
You know, I was going to ask when you first started writing, and you just answered that.
Yeah. 8 years old.
Yeah. 8 years old. Yeah. Yeah, never looked
back. Fantastic.
We were guests of Emily and John Goodwin and Galaxy Press at the recent fabulous Black Tie. What a night for We Don't Go to Things Like That. Oh, Writers and Illustrators of the Future volume.
Yeah.
Okay, for volume 42.
That's
and
right.
One
wonderful,
of the speakers,
wonderful contest, and John and Emily are just great, great friends. I've known them
just
30 years now. They're terrific people.
We just it's felt like nice we people. Were really in another world for us.
Yes.
It was just unreal. One of the speakers was Janneke Mikkelsen, and she came out. Yeah, and she was fabulous, and she really looked at the audience very seriously, Rob, and she said, I'm paraphrasing, this is what I heard, it stayed with me, is she looked out at the audience and she didn't point a finger, but she said, all of you that are authors in the audience that write science fiction, you are so important.
Yes.
You must keep writing. Because I'm thinking, because it's so fabulous and entertaining and because then we know as scientists what we need to accomplish. Those are
absolutely
my words. But I wondered what you're, yeah, how you.
100% I agree with that. In fact, first I'll just mention that I'm always at that black tie ceremony because I'm a judge. But this particular April, I had a 3-month gig as writer in residence at an Institute for Advanced Study, the HAVEKA, in Germany. You mentioned in the introduction, Jim, that I'd been a guest of honor at the World Science Fiction Convention when it happened to have been held in China. It was all over the world. And in China, every university has a government-sponsored science fiction club. And the reason is that China, looking at the West and seeing the history of science and technology in North America, Canada, the United States, has seen that the cell phone and medical diagnostic beds and all these things and the iPad, everything, was first shown in science fiction. And so they realize if they want to be technological leaders, they need young people to be inspired to go in to read science fiction, to give them the ideas, exactly as our astronaut friend said, for what science will then go ahead and make. Now, we always hope that the science will go ahead and make the good things, not there's a meme going around the internet right now, you know. Finally, we have invented the torment nexus of pain, as foretold in the science fiction novel, Do Not Invent the Torment Nexus of Pain.
Speaking just for one more moment before we take our first break, when you and I first had an opportunity, only one other time, and I still just glow about it. Back when when I was part of the writer block team and you were our guest, Richard Polinelli and I talked with you about your book that had just come out that week. We talked to you on Thursday and it had just come out, I think, on Tuesday, The Oppenheimer Alternative.
Think is my best novel.
Will you just take a moment and tell us a little about it? And I know it's being reissued as
yes,
we speak.
Yes, the reissue
almost,
just came out. Yeah.
Yeah,
The Oppenheimer Alternative is about the scientists who worked on the Manhattan Project being given an opportunity after the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki to kind of redeem themselves. There's a crisis facing the planet, and these are the brightest people ever assembled in one place. And they stay together instead of what happened in the real world. Excuse me. They're all university professors. They all, you know, the bombs were dropped in August of 1945. The university year starts weeks later in September of 45. They all disappeared back to Harvard or Yale or wherever they'd come from. In my novel, they stay together to save the world so that Oppie can go from saying, as he famously did, now I've become death, the destroyer of worlds, to now I've become life, the savior of our world.
Yeah, it was such a great book.
Thank you.
Great book. Oh my gosh.
At 26 novels, I think it's my best. And it's not my most recent.
I want to ask a quick question before we go to the break.
Yeah.
You know, just occurred as I listened to you, how do you find the time to be an expert on so many different things? You read a lot. You stay up, watch a lot of documentaries on TV, get maybe 1 hour of sleep a day.
I watch some documentaries, but I'm a voracious reader of nonfiction, science nonfiction, history nonfiction, philosophy nonfiction, and I just immerse myself in it. And that's where all the ideas come from. People say, where do you get your ideas? I get it from reading nonfiction. That makes me think, well, what can I dramatize here? Where will this be down the road?
You make references to so many different things. When you're just sharing what you are in this book, we have references to mythology, to Macbeth, to poetry, to, of course, popular music and film and such that the characters would have been familiar with. But you're giving us all of what you just talked about is also showing up in your work, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. My friend Joan Haldeman, who's a great science fiction writer, wrote the novel The Forever War, once said when he was asked, you know, what's your latest book about? And he says, everything that intrigued me in the last 5 years. And
I'm
writing a book every 3-4 years now. And it's exactly right. Everything that caught my fancy in science, philosophy, theology, history. And I think, where can it, what happens next? Where does it go from here?
Where does it go from
what
here?
What science fiction does. Yeah.
Well, we need to take our break so we can come back and really get into the book. But I hope you're having a good time, Rob, because we sure are.
Absolutely.
Lindsay, are you a writer? Our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, are standing by to assist you. They have a special offer, and we're going to take a listen. And when we come back, we'll be dancing in the moonlight and speaking more with our special guest, Robert J. Sawyer. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page starting at $369. Bluebookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Back, you've been listening to a little clip here of Dancing in the Moonlight performed by the group King Harvest. You know, Rob, there's lots of fun music and humor in your book, and we just kind of wondered, do you listen to music when you write?
No, I don't. I love listening to music, but not when I'm writing. And of course, the reason you just played Dancing in the Moonlight is because there's a key scene early in Downloaded 2, Ghosts in the Machine, where the main characters, or one of the main characters, is listening to that with somebody very near and dear to him who is not going to be around much longer, unfortunately. I find, and I have friends who write to music all the time.
Okay.
If there are lyrics in the music, I find that they call it prosody. The rhythm of your sentences starts to take on the rhythm of the music, not for me, not for the best rhythm for the, you know, where I want the emphasis to be. in a sentence, but where it's, you know, just following along with the tune in the background. So I listen to music when I'm doing email. I listen to it when I'm doing research. But when I start hitting the keyboard right in front of me here, and the music goes off, and I need essentially silence. Essentially silence.
Yeah.
I can hear the rhythm in my head, not somebody else imposing a rhythm.
Right. Both of the books, book one, The Downloaded, and then followed by the book that just came out in May of this year, The Downloaded 2, Ghosts in the Machine. It's interesting that they started as Audible books, didn't they?
That's right. Absolutely true. Audible.com reached out to me just before COVID and said, we, you know, big fans of your work. Mm. We would like to commission an original audio drama from you. And I said, well, I have written audio drama for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, but I'm a novelist. I don't want to do an audio drama. I want to write a book. And if you want to pay me enough money, which they did, I'm happy to let you have it exclusively as an audio book. And we went back and forth on how much that term would be. We ended on 6 months, exclusively for 6 months. But after that, I have the ebook rights, which I kept for myself, and the print rights, mm-hmm. which I sold to a very, very fine small press called Shadowpaw Press. The reason a small press, well, A, the proprietor of Shadowpaw was one of my writing students 20 years ago, so I trust him. And you can't always trust your publisher. And B, because the Big Five, and I've been published by four of the Big Five, Penguin Random House most recently, they insist on getting the audiobook rights. And they insist on getting the ebook rights. Well, I'd already sold Audible the audio rights and ebook rights. I get way more when I sell my own ebooks than I do when a traditional publisher sells them. So it worked very, very well for me. And then Downloaded One was a huge hit for Audible. And I take some credit for that. But I have to be blunt and say Brendan Fraser, the Academy Award winner, was the narrator for both Audible productions of Downloaded and Downloaded 2. And clearly, droves of Brendan's fans came, which was wonderful because so many of them had never read science fiction. I very carefully tried to craft a two-book series, well, originally just one book, but the two books to be welcoming to people who thought, oh, science fiction, it's all too technical, or science fiction is all just pew, pew, ray guns and and I tried to craft very emotional, very moving stories. I want people to laugh. I want them to cry. And I want them to be moved. And also, because it's science fiction, I want them to think.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the important things is these days, you know, we can get so glued to just images or we're not thinking. That's just a general. I'm not thinking. I'm thinking when I read and when there's the what if or there's the beautiful prose that still allows me with my imagination to be immersed in that landscape or whatever it might be, because I think I have a feeling we're losing, you know, and everything today, it's almost hieroglyphics, all the emojis and all, it's like we're also losing the ability to express ourselves in words. These folks' letters that go out, actually AI, it's clear AI is writing them, and yet I don't write nearly as well. If you get an invite from me, it's not going to look or sound anything like those AI ones, you know?
Well, of course, no matter how read you are, Bobby Jean, or I am, the AI has read everything.
Everything.
Every book that's ever been published, they pirated them and fed them into the large language models. Every blog that's ever been on the internet, every news story that's ever been on the internet, they read it all. So yes, these large language models are way better read than being in the history, no matter how deeply you've devoted your life to
You know, it's so hard to comprehend that, you know?
You know, they've read the Chicago Manual of Style and the Associated Press Style Book. They know exactly the rules of grammar, where we try to remember now, if you know,
do
the
I
word but is it preceded by a comma? Well, in some cases, yes, and in some, no, and it knows which cases it goes and which cases it doesn't.
It's a little terrifying, actually.
It is for a writer like me. I just saw on a Facebook group for self-published writers, somebody who said, I cranked out a book this month by just telling ChatGTP my vague ideas, and it rewrote it for me, and I put it up on Kindle. And then his last line was, which I thought, karma, didn't sell a single copy, which good, because the arts, whether it's what I do, which is writing fiction, whether it's what a poet does, whether it's what a songwriter does, a painter, somebody who writes plays for theater, this is what gives life joy and meaning and reflects the real human experience. I have no interest in computer generated art. And I think every writer should say, wait a minute. If I'm using computer generated cover and computer generated audiobook, those guys aren't going to stand up for me when somebody uses computer generated
That's a
next
good.
novel by Robert J. Sawyer or whoever else, or even Mitch Albom, who wrote to me this morning.
I know you have a question. I
Well,
know you have a question.
yeah, we like and get back to the story just for a second.
Get back into downloaded too.
We kind of like this phrase here, Chekhov's
Oh,
gun.
Chekhov's gun. We actually had to look that up because I know who Chekhov. I got that, but it's like
Yes, a
Chekhov's
lot of
gun.
people thought, because I'm famous for slipping in Star Trek references to my books. And of course, Pavel Andreyevich Chekhov was the navigator of the original Starship Enterprise. But Chekhov with an H in it, Chehovich, Anton, was a Russian playwright. And in one of his nonfiction pieces about how do you write, he said, well, if you show a gun hanging on the wall in Act One, it better go off. He was a playwright, better go off by Act Three. Or there was no point in having it on the wall on Act One. So have a little fun of it. You call it metafiction when there's parts of a fictional narrative that are kind of slyly winking at the reader that we know it's a fictional narrative.
That's
And
really
so when
fun.
they say, in the first chapter, and in honor of porn, they name a Russian character, we will call this Chekhov's gun. Well, readers who know what Anton Chekhov said know that that gun is going to come back and figure prominently, and it does. Later, very near the end of the story, right? So I'm
It's
having some
so
fun there.
fun. It is so fun.
It's interesting. We had a similar, not similar, but we had a situation talking to an author a while back, and just like this, and we said, "Well, you said something earlier in the book, and we kept waiting for that to be worked in, but it never got worked in." He
A
said, "Oh, I
loose
just gave
thread,
you a
right?
red herring." Just
Yeah,
gave you red herring, loose thread.
red
The analogy I use is, the arcade
herring.
game you go to an amusement park, Whack-a-Mole, where if you
Yeah,
have a
very
mole
good.
pop up at the beginning, it's fine. He can be up there for as long as you want, but by the end of the book, you got to whack
Yeah,
that
you gotta
mole
whack
down.
him.
And now in Downloaded One, I never intended to write a sequel, so all the whacks, all the moles are down. Downloaded Two, I left a couple of moles
I know
standing
you
up
did.
still
I know
because,
you did. Because there's gonna be a book three, I bet.
I want to write the book three, and then talking to Audible about that now. And if they don't take it, maybe I'll do it anyways. But book three, which has a title, and maybe we'll get to the song later, the Downloaded Three, Some Sunny Day, which is a reference that occurs in Downloaded Two to the Vera Lynn song from World War II.
So, ghosts in the machine. So we read the book, and so we understand it. It's not a spoiler alert to chat about. What is, can you tell us a little bit about Ghosts
Oh,
in the
yeah.
Machine? Where
In
did
fact, the opening
that
line of the
come from?
book is, chapter one, and then they've got
Yes, you.
the definition. Now, my title is Downloaded to Ghosts, plural, in the machine with
Right,
an S.
right.
But the definition that appears at the beginning of the book is ghost in the machine, colon, term used by philosophers for discussions of the notion of the brain being something, or sorry, the mind being something separate from the body. And it was originally actually a derisive term in psychology, which, you know, when anybody talks about the mind being something that extends beyond the body or exists after death or whatever, mm-hmm. it's just ghosts in the machine being the physical machine of the human body. But there's now an awful lot of stuff coming out of quantum physics and so forth about what they call non-locality, which means that your consciousness might not just be in this couple of pounds of gray matter between your ears. It might be dispersed around you and might indeed conceivably persist in some form after you expire. It's great fodder for a science fiction writer. I don't necessarily believe everything I write, but I have to be able to point to somewhere in the scientific literature where somebody has said it is plausible.
Yes. And there are lots of challenges to a consciousness that doesn't have a body at the moment.
That's right.
And we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that. So let's see. One of the places that you can get the books of many of the authors, including Robert J. Sawyers, is our affiliate page at bookshop.org, the Out West Shop. And take a listen to this. It'll tell you a little bit more. And when we come back, we will all go together when we go. And we'll be talking to Rob in just another moment. Don't go away. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all.
We will all go together. Tom Lehrer, you have some thoughts about that, Rob?
Oh, Rob, we've lost you. We can't hear you.
That's, of course, as you said, Jim, the great Tom Lehrer, satiric songwriter and performer as well. Wonderfully great songs. And that's particularly We'll All Go Together When We Go in a Nuclear Holocaust, which is part of the backstory of the Downloaded stories.
Yeah. So when we were talking just before the break, this idea that the subconscious or the consciousness or the mind is uploaded and it's living in your story. It's in a quantum computer and it's separated. And for whatever reason, the body that it belonged to initially maybe needs to be healed or, you know, there's a reason we're trying, but where there's an opportunity to keep the body still also not well
frozen. Yes. Keep the
frozen.
Body frozen.
Yeah.
I mean, cryogenic suspension.
Someday they may be able to come back together. But in this story, we have uploaded subconscious or consciousnesses that get downloaded into bodies that were not the original body, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yes. What are some of the things that happened?
Yeah, when the characters uploaded in the beginning in Downloaded One, just the year 2059, which when you stop to think about it, is not very far away. And the technology only was you could freeze your body and scan your mind and essentially store your consciousness in a quantum computer. But what they had discovered is unless your mind is actually constantly generating thoughts, it dies. Your mind just, it has to keep running or it's gone. And so They live in a virtual reality. Each person, an individual, I call it a silo, which is an individual partition for each person in the quantum computer. And some of them in the downloaded are astronauts who are going to go on a far distant interstellar voyage to Proxima Centauri. And others are convicted murderers who are told, well, look, if you let us upload your consciousness, you will perceive 20 years passing for you. But we've changed the clock speed of the computer, so really only 9 months will pass. So you'll pay your debt to society. You're doing 20 years for, you know, killing somebody. But your daughter will be 9 months older, not 20 years older. Your spouse will not have run off with somebody else. They can endure waiting 9 months for you. Maybe even your job will still be there. And certainly your skill set, whatever it was you did for a living, will not be obsolete in 9 months. But if you were gone for 20 years, you know, imagine being a computer programmer 20 years ago. Imagine being a radio host in the pre-digital era. You know, So, that's the shtick of the book.
Yeah. And we have some situations that are so very interesting, because if you let your mind just work with that. So we have a consciousness that is downloaded to an opposite sex body. And is
that's right now.
To,
exactly.
You know, learn what that's the sort of transgender situation. And we have one that is downloaded into a body much older. And she has some challenges. And then we have those ghosts in the machine. We have, and it does get solved. So we don't, it was not a spoiler alert necessarily, but we have duplicates.
And, that's right. And the people who were uploaded were duplicated without their knowledge.
Yeah. And so there's interesting, like, is a duplicate mind the same as the real mind? And what about the law? If it's a, you know, so you address so many interesting questions for us to ponder, don't you?
Thank you for saying that, Bobby Jean. My, you know, I call myself a science fiction writer, and you can see on the screen right there that my website is sfwriter.com, SF for science fiction. But I think it's the wrong name for the field, and certainly the part of the field that I write. I think it's not sci-fi. It should be philosophical fiction. Fiction, big questions and big ideas. And therefore, not sci-fi, but fi-fi.
Uh-huh. So we were curious, because you have such a grasp of this, that are there bodies somewhere frozen already in time, you know, now? And are there?
There are. There are. A company called Alcor, A-L-E-O-R. You can look them up on the web. And if you've got money, you can pay for them to cryogenically freeze either your whole body or just your decapitated head, in hopes that if they freeze your whole body, say you've got a terminal form of cancer, for instance, or you've died suddenly from a heart attack or whatever, as long as they freeze you very quickly, the idea is that, well, maybe down the road, 10 years, 100 years, 1,000 years, the technology to revive you will exist. And for those who freeze the whole body, which costs more, they just want to reanimate your physical body. For those who just have head frozen, the assumption is that by that time, we'll have Android, artificial human.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I've not signed up for it. I have a very good friend who did. You know, I mean, I understand people do it. They take out a life insurance policy when they're young, and the premium for the policy, or I should say the dividend when you die, goes straight to Alcor, and Alcor sends a helicopter to wherever you are in the United States, rushes you to their facility in the American Southwest, and quickly freezes you down to almost absolute zero, which is the coldest temperature.
I didn't realize we were just
I don't think I want to go that way.
Yeah. Well, they can freeze you. Nobody has yet been revived.
Revived.
You know, you're trusting them that the technology will eventually exist to do the other half of the bargain.
Yeah,
but you know, you might be doing a great contribution to science because people can study the effects, you know.
Buddy, I know.
Right, and that's the thing, right? My friend, all due respect to him, was fairly arrogant guy who figures the world of the future will benefit from having him, whether he's 50 or 100 or 500 years out of date. No, he'll be a freak. He'll be somebody that we would, you know, sure, if we brought back somebody from William Shakespeare's period, but not Shakespeare himself, that would be fascinating. But just somebody from 500 years ago, or that kind of Shakespeare's not quite 500. You would ask them some interesting questions, but you wouldn't let them drive a car. They've never been trained to do that. You wouldn't, certainly, they would be utterly baffled by computer technology. They probably wouldn't speak the same language, in the sense that if you actually listen to Shakespeare perform in Elizabethan English, it's almost incomprehensible to our ears because the pronunciations shift over time.
Right. I am looking at time. We want to get in one more song, and then we're going to come back and have a little more conversation with Rob. It has just flown by. So he made a reference a bit ago. We're going to hear We'll Meet Again, performed by Vera Lynn. Don't go away. There's more.
We'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know when. But I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll meet again, don't know where. Don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
We'll meet again, Vera Lynn. You know, Vera she's Lynn. A famous UK singer. You know, that's a song from World War II. That's a long time ago.
It's one of my mother's favorite songs, so that's one of the reasons I included it. And it's apropos because, of course, by the end of the Downloaded 2, without any spoilers, the characters are scattered in space and time, and the Downloaded 3 will be about somehow getting them all back together again, getting the old band back together again kind of thing. And also, though, excuse me, that song is used at the very end of the great anti-nuclear war film Dr. Strangelove, directed by Stanley Kubrick, that came out in 1963. It's used ironically there. And of course, that also is the nuclear war theme that I'm also echoing in Downloaded and the Downloaded 2, Ghosts in the Machine.
Yeah. Well, and we know we're going to meet again next year when book three comes out, or whenever that is, Rob.
Absolutely.
So we
and
know
we'll
meet we're
again
meet
at
again.
The Writers of the Illustrated Gala in Los Angeles in April.
That would be wonderful. So Jim has, where can people find you and follow you quickly?
Yeah, sure. sfwriter.com is my website. On most social media, you'll just find me as at Robert J. Sawyer with no period and all scrunched together. So Facebook, Robert J. Sawyer, X, formerly Twitter, Robert J. Sawyer. But on Instagram, which the younger people like, I picked a name that is harder to remember. It's RJS, my initials, in, word, in, T-O, which is a nickname for Toronto. So RJS and T-O over there.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm easy to find. Just Google. The best thing I ever did for my career, I'll tell you this, is I put that middle initial in my name right there. That J has made me Googleable because there are Millions of Robert Sawyers in the world.
Yeah.
But I'm almost always the first hit you'll find on Robert J. Sawyer.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Jim, you have a quote. Time? I don't know if we have time, actually. I don't know.
We'll give it a shot. This is actually the first page of the book. Roscoe Cadoulian, you know, he's our main character. And he's thinking, or saying, 7 years have passed since I found the child's corpse, but I still had nightmares about it. Shortly after we'd all downloaded out of our individual virtual silos, we split into teams and searched inside the Quantum Cybernetics Institute for items that might increase our chances of survival. Back then, the astronauts were still suspicious of us ex-cons, so I was accompanied by their captain, Letitia Garvey. I'm an old movie buff. Well, I guess they're all old movies now. And Letitia reminded me of Whitney Houston, the singer who starred in The Bodyguard. I wish I could say I looked a little like her leading man, Kevin Costner, but I'm more of what you'd get if you stuck Peter Lorre's head on a linebacker's body.
Thank you. Yes. That's the very opening paragraphs of the downloaded.
Yes. We didn't want to do. Yeah. We didn't want to do any spoiler alerts. So we thought we should go right from the beginning. So thank you so much for being with us tonight, Robert, for episode 188. Catch the replay of the video on Rendezvous with a Writer on LA Talk Radio's Facebook pages, YouTube on LA Talk Radio. Thank you to DJ tonight, Sam Hassan, and LA Talk Radio's founder. Our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. Next week, do join guest host once again. Tom Swearingen is taking the reins. He's an award-winning poet, and his guest is a good friend of ours and his. Randy Palmer, who is a singer-songwriter, wonderful singer-songwriter. And these two have actually collaborated on a song recently. It's going to be a wonderful episode. So please join Tom and Randy next week. Jim, do you have a parting comment?
As we always say, it's a great day out west.
Keep writing.
And we'll keep reading.
And we'll see you down the trail. Good night, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Good night. Live long and prosper.